Measures Radio Network, the voice of the 3%, is now on the air.
Guns, self-defense, survival, current events, and your future.
Can't take me.
We're rapidly approaching desperate times. Have you prepared your family physically, mentally, spiritually to face these times? Tyrant has overstepped his authority. What will you do when he comes to your door?
You can't take me.
The Shooting Bench, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central.
It's easy to take liberty for granted when you've never had it taken from you.
The Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time here on Just Measures Radio Network. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs. Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog. By the banks of a stream sat one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man, and I can't seem to stop.
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge.
Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it.
One shot at a time. Just like Gonzales, we're keeping our guns.
Yeah, my only hope was Betty Lou. She was the one. A combination AK-57 Uzi Raider laser triple barrel double scoped heat seeking shotgun.
Nobody knew where he came from. They only knew he came in.
Uh-oh, here he comes again. Here's Cope with the Shooting Bench.
I still remember these words. Oh, it's plain that you're looking for trouble. Trouble's what I try to shun. If that's what you want, then that's what you'll get. 'Cause cowboy, we're both packing guns.
You know what's good for you. Stay tuned for 100% Gun Talk, coming up right now.
44 spoke, and he said, let him smoke 17 inches of flame. For the big one had never cleared leather, beaten before he could start. A little round hole had appeared on his shirt. The bullet went clear through his heart.
The views expressed in the following broadcast are not necessarily those of Just Measured Radio or the owners or sponsors thereof. Any and all mention of laws, ordinances, or policies are not to be construed as legal advice or necessarily all-inclusive. The listener bears all responsibility in verifying this information. We advise that this broadcast may be inflammatory to those with thin skin, limp wrists, and room temperature IQs. Furthermore, the statements expressed by the host may contain information known to the state of California to inspire free thinking and may promote unexpected growth of testicles and backbone. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, here we are. It's Thursday. It's the 9th of October. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. Thursday night is our mostly all gun-related edition. We throw in a few other things once in a while, and the format is going to continue. And we're going to, that we started this week, we're going to throw a song in occasionally just because I want to. And otherwise, it's 99 and 44, 100% pure gun talk. But once in a while, there's some news, a lot of news items and stuff. I'm not going to get into them tonight. I may make quick mention of a couple, but we're not going to get into them deeply. I think Concrete and covered a lot of good stuff tonight, and I don't reckon we need to get into that too much. We got some gun thing. I thought tonight, sounds like I may have to go kill something. I got dogs going crazy out there. Let's see if they calm down here. Let me. But Doc mentioned the other night, we were talking about something, I don't remember what it was, but he mentioned something about the 357 Magnum. And I allowed that's probably a pretty good topic tonight. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about the extolling the virtues of the 357 Magnum. There's a lot of stuff you can do with that gun, and I'm right proud of them. I like them pretty good. Now, I don't, like I say, for handguns, I don't do revolvers much anymore. I still have one. I have one, and the one that I have is a favorite of Doc's, too, and that's the Ruger GP100. Great gun. And we're going to get into that and kind of comparisons a little bit between that and some of the semi-automatics. Going to 357 Magnum rifles and lots. So a lot of stuff to talk about. And I do accept, I hate to say that, actually I'm not going to say it right now, but I will before it's over with. Now, I told you the new website's up. Still got a lot to do on it. I haven't had time to work on it. I was hoping to, thank you, Concretin, hoping to get some more stuff done on the new website, theshootingbench.us. And I was going to talk quite a bit about, or I was going to put on there the online store and get it up and running. I did get a few things on it. But what I did do today and yesterday is we got a whole bunch of the colloidal silver manuals on CD. And we put our Glock Armor manual on CD. So those will be some of the first things that go up there on the new online store. Not going to be a whole ton of stuff on there. It's not going to be a store that you're going to spend all night going through to find stuff. There's going to be, you know, at most there'll ever be, you know, 20 things on there or something like that. It's not going to be a big deal. But some of the stuff will be some of the things that you guys call me for all the time. So the Glock Armorer's Manual. Now, that's not the one you get from Glock. That's the one you get from Cope. There's quite a few different things that talked about on there and things that Glock doesn't include in their manual. So, and I was looking online, even on Amazon. Now, that's not to say that someone hasn't pirated it and it's not available for free download somewhere, but even on Amazon, if you look at the regular issue Glock manual, I got a reprint here of Glock manual, they're $26 for that one. So, what we're going to do on ours, whether it's the CD or the paper version, either one, they're going to be $20, and I'm going to pay the shipping. They're just $20. That's it for either one, and shipping will be free. The colloidal silver ones, either the CD or the paper version, will be $10 for right now. So, because we got a lot of those things going out, we've had a little, quite of concern with all this Ebola stuff going on and everything. We've gone through quite a few of those silver manuals. We're going to have the silver strips on there. They're $10 a pair. Actually, they'll be $12 with shipping and everything. So we'll have those on there soon. I'll have the regular, the generator, this colloidal silver generators. Have my books on there. The dying is not an option. They're actually on there now. I just haven't made the haven't put the website up there where it's visible yet, or the website is, but the online store is not visible yet. So lots and lots of stuff with this Ebola going on. 65 not a sheep. Somebody must have lost a password there. Good to see you in here. Let me check and see who all is hanging around here. Peanut Rider, good to see you in here. Let's scroll up here a little bit and check and see. Queso's with us. Desert Rat, the Tinker, Doc, Drumjaw. Edge of the Woods just came in a few minutes ago. There goes those dogs again. I may have to go out there and take care of something here. Minnie, Not Too Late, Northwest Heavy, Peanut Rider, Pumpkin Cat, Rights at Risk, Texas Sheepdog, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Anonymous right now. All right. Okay, let's carry on with what we're doing. I think that's all the... Oh, we will be out at the ranch tomorrow night. Liberty Lounge will be brought to you from Schott's Ranch. And then I would suspect I'm going to talk to Amy tomorrow, and I will let you know during the show tomorrow night, but we're probably going to take most of next week off. We're going to be traveling a lot, and a lot of times I promise you guys a show, and then something comes up in the travel plans or whatever, and we don't make it, and I feel bad about that. So we're going to make up our mind one way or the other when, if at all, there'll be a show next week. I haven't personally, I don't think I have ever taken a week off since I've been doing this. I don't think. I'm taking a couple of days in a row off here and there, but I don't think I've ever taken a full week off. But might be about time after 10 years of doing this. But okay, let's get on with our main topic tonight. We were talking, I don't remember what brought it up the other night when Doc brought up the 357. Now, what I was going to say a while ago and elected not to, I'm going to go ahead and say it now, and I got my fireproof suit on. I think that in the hands of somebody that knows what they're doing, and I don't mean just the average guy out there. See, the thing is there was a time when the muzzle-loading, the front stuffer, you know, black powder revolver was about as state-of-the-art as you could get. And when you're talking about people alone with muzzle-loading Derringers and stuff like that, it was as good as it could get. And people in those days, it was wonderful. It was awesome. It was amazing compared to some other things. If you could have, you know, the lever action, the Winchester 94, what an obvious, tremendous advancement in fighting rifles. But if you could have traded those guys at that time in the cavalry AK-47s, I bet they'd have been all over that. Of course, the training curve would have been probably a little tough. So in this day and age, considering what we're facing, I don't consider the 357 Magnum to be that great of a fighting handgun anymore. It's a great self-defense weapon. It's fine. It's not my first choice, but I'm talking about fighting as if, you know, zombies, UN, illegal aliens, whatever the case may be, screaming hordes of Chinese. Between the capacity and the time to reload and all that, it's not my first choice. Could I hold my own with it? Absolutely. I'm pretty damn good with a revolver. It's just not my first choice. But I still can't quite make myself get rid of it, the last one. And I'll tell you why. I may have talked about this once before. But I feel that when things get bad enough, and I also feel that I will live to see that, barring any unnatural and totally unnecessary premature death, I think that I'll see that. And I think that at some point, manufacturing and supply and everything is going to be such that we may not be able to find magazines and whatnot for some of our semi-automatic handguns. If that were to happen, you can always fall back on a revolver. That's one thing about it. It's not going. Now the thing is, when that happens, the playing field will be leveled a little more. Now right now, it wouldn't be my first choice, because most everybody out there has got, you know, Beretta 92s and Glocks and 1911s and all this kind of stuff, and I may not be the best choice for me. When things go to hell and it gets to a point where we may not be able to find parts and all that stuff for some automatic. Now, that's not going to be anytime soon. I understand that. But it may happen to my son, my kids. So having a revolver to put back, if nothing else, for that reason, I think is a good idea. So let's... The Peanut Rider, you're right about that. That's one of the things about the revolvers. You don't leave too much litter laying around there. Not that you care anything about littering with a piece of brass, but if there was a time when you were involved in something that you didn't need proof that you were there laying around, then revolver's a good choice for that. And people that are, it boils down to training. You know, if you watch Jerry Michalak, he can shoot six rounds and reload and shoot six more rounds in 2.99 seconds. And that's better than a lot of people do with a semi-automatic. So, but I'm saying the average person out there is near that fast. And how many speed loaders can you or will you carry? The only reasonable amount of time for a reload in a revolver is with a speed loader. The second best is speed strips. If the gun is set up for it and they make them, then the moon clips, yeah, that's all well and good until you run out. You can only carry so many, and then you're down to loading them by hand. So I figure that one or two speed loaders for emergencies, and when you have the opportunity, certainly you'll dig them out of your pocket or out of a pouch or something and load them two at a time by hand. And if it comes down to the heat of the moment there where you really have to be faster with it, then you do your speed loaders. But anyway, there's a lot of pros and cons to that. And I think the biggest pro for revolvers is the fact that it doesn't require a magazine to operate. I wouldn't say that some revolvers are all that much more reliable than some semi-automatics. Because if a guy doesn't know the ins and outs of a revolver pretty well, there are some things that can make them malfunction also. But with the advent of some of these newer semi-automatics, Glock's not the only one. I don't like XDs. A little bit. I don't like them, but they are reliable. The M&Ps are reliable enough. Even the old crappy Sigma, as sorry a triggers as they have and everything else, they're still pretty cotton picking reliable. So if that's the only argument that you have to go with the revolvers, then you're pretty weak. But and Peanut Rider, that's a good point. If you're reloading, then you got to make sure that those bullets are crimped pretty well, or they will jump forward. If they're in a lever action rifle, they'll get pounded backwards under recoil in the tubular magazine. So there are some issues with reloading that you need to consider that if you're doing a revolver, at least something that powerful. There's who's that? Oh, Amy's here. So look at the, someone said, oh, it was David Cowell. And David Cowell, by the way, it's good to see you in here. By golly, we don't see you in here with us very often. I was beginning to think that my breath stank or something. You didn't don't hang around too much. But I know it's way out there on the other side of the world. It gets pretty late out there in your neck of the woods when reading what Doc said. Yeah, when you look at the lever action rifles, if that bullet does get pounded, this is with any cartridge, some worse than others, but probably the 40 Smith & Wesson is one of the worst, very high pressure and larger diameter. You knock that bullet back a few thousandths and that pressure starts going up real fast. If you, a 357 Magnum, if it goes back into that case a little bit, now that's going to depend on what kind of powder you're using, whether it's loaded to full Magnum pressures or not, and a lot of things to consider there. But let's just say, for instance, that you're using Winchester 296. Winchester 296 requires that you load at least 90% of the available powder capacity with powder. So if you have that bullet slips back in there a 16th of an inch or so, and let's say you've got it loaded up there pretty stiff, let's see, 20, 23 and a half, 24 grains of 296, excellent, excellent load for a 357 Magnum. It works well in rifles. 296 is a slow-burning enough powder that it is extraordinarily accurate and does very well in the rifle as well as the handgun. But when you load it that full, it is at a safe pressure, providing your bullet is crimped in the right place. However, if that bullet were to jump backwards a little bit, or get pounded backwards, it's not going to jump backwards, in a tubular magazine, or for whatever reason, let's say you happen to drop your speed loader on the ground, your speed loader is going to be much heavier on the bullet in, and it's probably going to land on the bullets. If it does, pretty good chance, if you drop it on a rock or a concrete floor or something, there's a pretty good chance that you might push a bullet back in there a little bit, maybe even two or three of them. And that pressure could skyrocket if you do that. Now, if you're loading unique or 231 or blue dot or something like that, the danger is not quite as high, but it's still there. So I saw that story with that. This was been in the making for several months here. I guess they're looking at ex-wife is suing Gaston Glock here for a lot of money. It's all right. It's good for him. It's good training. Queso, how's the trigger on the M&Ps? The newer M&Ps are quite a bit better. The early M&Ps, and they addressed it fairly quickly after they came out, The reset sucked on them. It was one of those that you reset and then have to take the slack up again and press the trigger. So it was pretty bad. But all in all, the M&P triggers are not bad, and they can be made better. The ones that are very difficult to make better is the Sigma. XD is a little feisty also, but the Sigma is a real bear. And to get it down to down to even 6 pounds is a pretty good project. But out of the box, they're about 12 pounds, which is over twice what the Glock is out of the box. So The XD, though, has a fairly decent trigger. You can smooth it up a little bit, and it doesn't take a whole lot. But here, you need the keys? Okay, so it is. That's 12 pounds is even on the heavy side for a lot of double-action revolvers. Or, yeah, I don't know, I'd say it's on the medium side. You get the revolver down to much less than 10 pounds, or double-action anyway. Then you start looking at reliability problems, unless you're going to mess with the, lighten the hammer and stuff like that. But that Sigma is all. Now, the one good thing I can say about the Sigma is it's reliable. It's as reliable, as far as I'm concerned, as a Glock. It's just that you get tired of pulling the trigger after a little while. If you have a stock Glock, the stock Glock runs about 5.5 pounds. If it's any heavier than 5.5, then somebody's been messing with the trigger a little bit. It's a lot easier to get lighter. Depending on what you want to do with it. You know, if it's a fighting gun, then you don't want to get it too many. You might get it smooth, but you don't want to get it down to, 2.5 pounds or anything like that. If it's the New York trigger, it is one of two things. It's either 8 pounds or it's 12 pounds. So, drum jock and the trigger, over travel will be adjusted in an SKS? Yes, it can. No, I wouldn't say adjusted. You would have to install a stop in there. It's kind of ugly and doesn't look very good. It's functional, but the only real good reason, other than the fact that you may just want it, and not to talk you out of it, but the only good reason to have an over travel stop in something is for something that is has the potential of being exceedingly accurate, and the over travel would cause you to pull it off just a little bit, and that is not the SKS. I've put over travel stops in good accurate bolt action rifles. Are worth the money if you're really wanting to get the utmost accuracy out of them. The SR pistols burner, I don't know for sure. We haven't done the SR style pistols, but I'm sure that they can be fixed up. There's not too many guns. The SKS is probably the SKS and the what we were just talking about, the Sigma, which is now the whatever, they've changed that. It's not the Sigma anymore. But those two are a couple of the worst on the market to get the triggers down. And Glock is tough. Not the Glock, the SKS. So, well, anyway, we've blabbered right on here just like we had good sense. So I'll be back in a few minutes.
Lately about gun bans, naturally, in the wake of what happened in Connecticut last week. And like every other American, my heart goes out to the families who have had to experience this tragedy so close to Christmas. And I'm not one of those people who admonishes any American for bringing up the issue of gun bans and the Second Amendment in the wake of a tragedy like this. I think it's natural and normal. And I think it is an opportunity to discuss this issue openly. I wanted to have my two cents as someone who was formerly anti-gun and formerly anti-Second Amendment. Yes, not anymore, but I used to be. And one of the things I used to say, and I hear a lot of people saying about modern weaponry is, look, you don't need an assault rifle or a machine gun to take down a bear or a lion or whatever you're taking down in modern America. And that's true, but it's also a mistake to believe that the Second Amendment was made for hunters. It has nothing to do with hunting at all, and this was one of the things that surprised me when I started researching the Second Amendment. It has absolutely nothing to do with hunting. It has to do with freedom and what the ability to brandish a weapon means to your freedom, because your freedom needs to be protected. And how do you protect freedom? Well, let's just think about the last group of people in this country who are forbidden from owning guns. That would be black people. Why? Because we were slaves. And what would happen if you gave a slave a gun? Well, they would no longer be a slave. Right? Because a gun is one of the most powerful weapons in any revolution. Our founding fathers knew that, and that's why they enshrined it in our Constitution. They were revolutionaries. And they wanted the people to have the freedom to rise up against any oppressive government, just like they did with theirs. It's what keeps a society free, because when a government knows that its citizens can rise up against it, well, they're a little less inclined to enslave its population. It's why every dictator in modern history has begun with a gun ban in their country under the auspices of protection and safety. But what it did was disarm the citizenry. Do we have a government that we need to revolt against right now, physically speaking? Well, no. But that doesn't mean we never will. That doesn't mean some of us won't ever be enslaved again. I hear Democrats talk all the time about specific conservatives or Republicans. If they get into office, they'll send us back to Jim Crow. They want to put you all back in chains. Well, if you don't want that to happen, then don't support a gun ban. You can ban guns, but you can never ban evil. The best we can do is to tell our children, I will do everything in my power to protect you from evil, even if it means blowing its head off when it walks through the door.
There was 40 feet between them when they stopped to make their play. And the swiftness of the ranger is still talked about today.
Texas red and not cleared leather for a bullet fairly ripped. And the Ranger's aim was deadly with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
All right. Let's get back here on subject here. Minnie, I knew that was coming. I knew that Jan Morgan is the one that owns that shooting range in Arkansas that said no Muslims. And the Muslims, of course, are asking the State Department or Department of Justice or whatever to get involved in this. And I'm thinking Jan might just say, okay, fine. We'll just shut it down. I don't know if she'd go that far or not. I would. But we'll see. We'll see how she holds up with this. It'll be a pretty good fight. She was already, the day that she announced it, she was already gearing up for lawsuits and stuff. So she's prepared to take on the fight, and I'm sure with her, you know, if she'll go ahead and fight like I think she's going to. We'll find out though. It's going to be interesting. This global warming stuff, Kansas has the earliest frost on record. There was snow, three or four weeks ago up in, up north. And global warming's tough. Yeah, it's a problem. I can tell. Okay, let's get back here to the 357. Let's look. Someone said, I think it was David Cal, said he'd rather have the 10 millimeter than the 357. Well, if you use, and we've talked about the Taylor factor many, many times on the show, as opposed to your muzzle energy that they have in the reloading books and the gun catalogs and all that kind of stuff. But if you look at if you use the Taylor factor to figure that out, the 40 Smith & Wesson, and a lot of you are not going to believe this, figure it out. You know how to do it. It would be the diameter in thousandths of an inch times the weight in grains times the velocity in feet per second divided by 7,000, and you come up with a relative number. It's not pounds. It's not anything. It's just a number to use for comparisons. And if you use it, and it's much more accurate when you're comparing different calibers than the old tired foot-pounds of energy stuff, which does not take into account the diameter of the bullet. So, anyway, if you use that, you'll find that the 40 Smith & Wesson is virtually identical to the 357 Magnum. Now, the difference is going to be bullet performance, because the 357 is faster, but the 40 is heavier and bigger in diameter. So you get all these factors compared apples to apples there. The 40 Smith & Wesson hits as hard as the 357 Magnum does. And it's not rocket science to figure that out. And I don't know why these idiots on them, these chat rooms and forums and stuff, talk about the 40 short and weak. I don't know what they have against the 40. If you're too big a wuss and you can't handle it, then fine, just say you're a wuss and can't handle it. But to knock it when it does so well in all aspects of its glorious life, then why would you knock it? But I thought you needed me to get the lid off for you. The 10 millimeter smokes the 357 Magnum, smokes it. It's depending on how it's loaded. If you use something loaded by Double Tap or Buffalo Bore or Cope Reynolds, then you're scaring the hell out of 41 Magnum ballistics with the 10 millimeter. Out of a 6-inch barrel, that 10 millimeter is quite the hunting gun. But the queso, I don't know about that. The ones I've chronographed have been very much on par with the. They've been, depending on the length of your barrel, the 165 grain bullet runs out there 1,000 or so feet a second, and that still is every bit on par with the with the 357 Magnum. Now, the feds long, long ago gave up on the 10mm, unless they've just recently started a brand new deal. The feds used the 10mm for a while and decided that they didn't have the testicular fortitude that was required to shoot them well with their some of their smaller framed agents and the female agents and stuff. They had a little trouble with it, so... Hang on a minute, I got my fans not working on my computer. There we go, let's try that. But they, besides for the expense and everything else, the 10mm was, it didn't fly for very long, but it is a potent round. It's definitely do everything that you need to do with a handgun, up to and including any game animal that North America has to offer. It's, well, we don't want to get off on the 10mm too much right now. We've talked about that a lot, but looking at the 357, if you were to take a... Now, the 357 changes dramatically if you go to a contender or a lever-action rifle, but even at a revolver, of course, the revolver, you lose a lot of velocity in your between the barrel-cylinder gap there where it loses a lot of gas pressure. Obviously, the tighter that gap is, the less you lose. But you get to a point where it gets so tight that after a few shots and it warms up a little bit, that you start sacrificing reliability. And the Freedom Arms 454 Casull is like that. If you shoot a couple of cylinders through it pretty quickly, it could start dragging or even lock up on you until it cools off a little bit because that barrel cylinder gap is so tight. But I think on the average, you know, 4 to 6 thousandths is pretty standard on that. Once you get down to 2 or 3 thousandths, then you start reliability becomes questionable then. But and again, it depends on how fast you shoot, how hot your loads are, and, you know, a number of factors like that. So don't run off and go tell everybody, yeah, if you, Cope said that if you shoot the 357 with the barrel cylinder gap too light, it'll lock up on you. It won't, unless you're, you know, it depends on the how fast you're shooting it and everything. So the queso, I don't know why you'd want to switch out of a Glock 22 anyway. It's an awesome gun, an awesome round. The 40 Smith & Wesson is, like I said, it's every bit the equal as far as striking force, you know, whatever you want to call it, as the 357 Magnum. The 40, you know, I've taken the 40 Smith & Wesson, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 times now, and shot it out to 500 yards, and it's not only powerful enough to get there, but it's accurate enough to make, you know, relatively reliable hits at 500 yards. It does really well at 300, and that's not to say that the 357 wouldn't do every bit as well as that. I'm just saying that the 44 or the 40 Smith & Wesson would keep right up with it there. So that's why if I can get that kind of performance out of the 40 and or the 10, either one, if you want to go that way, and get the higher capacity, lower recoil, less muzzle blast, less flash, and faster reload, you know, whole 9 yards, then why exactly would I want to go with the 357? So then, not saying one word bad about the 357. I won't do that because I like them. I've got a couple of them. But just saying, for my primary fighting gun, that's not my first choice. But if you look at the velocities of the, let's say, the rifle, when I had, back when I was doing a lot of chronographing and messing around with these, it wasn't too awfully hard using Winchester 296 to get 2,000 feet a second out of the 357 Magnum rifle, carbine, whatever you want to call it. Now, if you look at the reload manual, it says about 1950 is about it. But you got to remember that these reloading manuals, if you look at the Hornady is in, where? It's in Nebraska, I believe. And the CCI, one, the Spear, is in Lewiston, Idaho. Elevation is low, air is heavier, and as you pick up about every 5,000 feet, you gain, and this is a rule of thumb, depending on the caliber and how hot it's loaded and what the temperature is and everything else, but you pick up around 100 feet a second. So when I was doing these in northern Idaho and New Mexico, and it wasn't too hard to get 2,000 feet out of it. So 2,000 feet a second out of a 125 grain bullet, there's, if you look at the, if it's zeroed at 50 yards, which would be a pretty decent, 75 might be a little better. If you zeroed it at 75 yards, you're only a tenth low at 25, which nobody's going to notice the difference. You're only four tenths low at 50, nobody's going to notice the difference. You are right on at 75, and then an inch in 1.1 inches low at 100. 125, you're only 3 inches low. So that's not bad for a little, what I would consider a little medium range, medium game gun or anti-personnel gun. If you get out to 150 yards with it, you're 6 inches low. So that's not bad for a little pistol caliber carbine. I can live with that. So the 158 grain bullet in the loading manual says 15 50. I got 16 out of mine, and I actually, when I tested that one, I was in Texas. I was in Beaumont, Texas when I done that. So it was now, and that was with 24 grains of 296, and it wasn't terribly hard to get 1600 feet a second out of it. So that if you go with the 158 grain bullet, now remember what our figures were there. If we went with the 158 grain at 1600 feet a second, we are, let's see, zeroed at 50 again. No, at 75, I'm sorry. At 75, we're not that much difference. It was 0.1 inches low at 25, so with the 158 grain, it's 0.4. It was 0.4 with the 125. With the 158, it's 0.7. So you're 3/4 of an inch low at 50 yards, zeroed at 75. That's great. You're only 2 inches low at 100, 1.9 inches, 5 inches at 125, 9 inches at 150. So not too hard to keep them in the thoracic cavity area of a human-sized target out to 150 yards or better without any holdover or anything. So I think it's a good choice for stuff like that. It loads fast. And the one thing I'll say about lever action, regardless of whether it's a 30-30 or 45-70 or 44-357, is they are balanced, so there's nothing like a lever-action rifle just for carrying. They're fast handling, they're very well balanced, and it's just a neat, neat little gun. I really enjoy those things. Peanut Rider, that's a pretty horsey load you got there. But it would sure do the trick, no doubt about it. But, we still kind of get into of pros and cons of weight and power and recoil and all that. If you need that much power and it's available, that's great. But, let me back up here. Hang on, stop everything. Back up, rewind the tape. Right now, it just reminded me right now when Peanut Rider put this up here. I was talking, when I was talking about 23 and 24 grains of 296, strike that from the records. Thou shalt not. Of course, in the first place, it wouldn't fit. But thou shalt not try to put 23 grains of 296 or 24 grains or whatever it was I said in a .357 Magnum case. No, 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 not even. I believe I was using 16 grains in the .357. I haven't loaded the .357 for so many years that I don't know why my brain went to the .44 there. So be sure when you play the archive, just rewind that and scratch that out and keep going. No way, Jose, did you put 20 anything grains of 296 in the .357 Magnum. Like I said, in the first place, it won't fit. You probably couldn't fit, 18 grains is probably about a level full case, no room for the bullet there. So you wouldn't be able to do that anyway. You'd figure out right away that I was full of poop there. But anyway, safety first. All right, I'll be back in a minute.
Jack Daniels, if you please. Didn't do me wrong. Jack Daniels, if you please. Knock me to my knees. You can kill this pain. It's driving me insane since my baby's gone. Cigarettes and whiskey. Call my shaking hand. I just lost a lover to a one-night stand. Something temporary. Too late I had learned. Someone from her past said it couldn't last. A bridge she could burn. Didn't do me wrong. Jack Daniels, if you please. Knock me to my knees. You can kill this pain. It's driving me insane since my baby's gone. Promises were broken. Dreams were left to die. Words were spoken, tears were in our eyes. Something temporary, those tears will fade away. Do the best you can, help me understand these games that people play. Didn't do me wrong. Jack Daniels, if you please. Knock me to my knees. You can kill this pain. It's driving me insane since my baby's gone. You can kill this pain. It's driving me insane since my baby's gone.
You must figure I'm a real dangerous man.
Now you listen to me.
Who the hell are you?
You know. You all know exactly who I am. Say my name.
You what? I don't have a damn clue who the hell you are.
Yeah, you do.
That's right.
Now, say my name.
John Galt. On the Teotihuacan Radio Show, live Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Cigarette Shop, Saturday evening is 9 p.m. on JMR. Remember, we all are the library for those who come after us.
I just hate stupid people.
It was over in a moment and the folks had gathered round. There before them lay the body of the outlaw on the ground. Oh, he might have went on living, but he made one fatal slip when he tried to match the ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip. Big iron, big iron.
Okie doke, we're back a little before the top of the hour. Welcome to the Shooting Bench for those of you that have just joined us. But, Doc, we had when we used to get those in at the store, we had two different prices. If we left them full of cosmoline and stuff and expected somebody else to clean them out, they were one price. And if we went and cleaned it all out and lubed it and got it going, it was, I think it was $10, $15 more, something like that. But the way to do it is pull it out of the stock, take it to the car wash, put it on hot wash, give it a quick hosing out, and flip it over to rinse before your time runs out, and get it out. That really, really shortens. Of course, you never get it all out. I don't care what you do with it. You shoot it very much and get it hot, you'll find that stuff seeping out of the pores there in different places. But the fastest way to get it where it's sellable and looking good and not have crap all over it is in the car wash. It works really well. But anyway, yeah, those if you're going to use detachable magazines in the SKS, most of the steel ones that I've found have been, the overwhelming majority of them have been very questionable in reliability. Once in a while you find one that works pretty good. But the 20-round TAPCO, yes, sir, 100%. It is every bit as reliable as the SKS should be with its stock magazine. They're great. They're cheap. No reason not to have, a dozen of them laying around. And it works really well. But you still got that stupid duck bill thing on it, and it's hard to carry and stash and, you know, put them in the several of them in a pouch and stuff like that. But if it weren't for that, that would be the way to go with that. But the TAPCO ones are 100%. Every time you pull the trigger, providing you don't have a problem with the gun itself, then you'll never have a malfunction because of that magazine. The Minnie, I don't know about where you're at, but we still have hot water in the car washes around here. Or at least the one that I use every once in a while. well, okay, so it would, but I don't know if I'd want cosmoline in my dishwasher. It gets plenty hot enough and everything. You'd have to break it down. I'm not sure if you could fit that barreled receiver in the average dishwasher or not. You probably could if you put it in there at a bit of an angle diagonally. But I'm not sure that I would want to have that cosmoline in my dishwasher. With the hot water and stuff, it will probably run all right. But you got to remember, just the same reason we don't put bacon grease and stuff down the drain, I don't know that I'd want cosmoline in my sewer line either. So car wash is quick, easy. Let them clean up the mess. That's what they get paid for. So. And that way you can get for sure into all the little cracks and crevices and all that. And it doesn't hurt to hose down the stock, because I tell you, the stock, the original stock for that, is soaked with that crap. And when you shoot it, it gets hot, you leave it laying out in the sun, and it'll start bleeding. It'll start coming out of the wood. So, warm it up good, try to use hot water, wash the stock off too. When you get done, put a little, linseed oil or something like that on it, and you'll have a pretty nice looking gun out of it for a dollar and a half or so worth of quarters to run the car wash. Another thing, you bounce on back to the 357 here again. It's pretty versatile in as much as you can shoot everything from 110 grain bullets up to 180s. Actually, shoot 200s. And most of your revolvers, you got to do some experimenting with them, because a lot of times that 180 will be too long. Of course, the cantilever is moved way forward on the 180 grain bullet, so it should crimp down there far enough that you're. But there, you still may find that your bullet may stick out a little bit too far for the revolver to work to cycle properly. And you don't find any data for the lever action rifle with 180 grain. I mean, there's probably some out there on the internet or something, but the conventional reloading manuals don't have it because it's longer than the magazine will handle. It doesn't feed well. So, but I'd like to, you know, 180 grain bullet out of that rifle. You could single load it if you wanted to. Not that big a deal. It's a little bit tough with the, it's not really, as long as you don't have any rounds in the magazine. If you jack one out and let your lever come back towards you about a half inch and just drop one of those in the top of it and slam it shut, it wouldn't be that hard to do. So it might be something to consider, especially if you're hunting something that requires a little extra horsepower. It's a little slower than some of your average single shots, but not that much. But out of an 8.5 inch, 8 3/8 inch Smith & Wesson, you're looking at with accurate number 9, you're looking at 1,300 feet or so a second. Now this is where the 296 starts losing, because even with a max load of 296, you're only getting 1,100 feet a second. I say only. 180 grain bullet at 1,100 feet a second is still pretty good stuff out of a handgun. That's with that load right there, you would surpass the 40 Smith & Wesson just a little bit. But if you get back the most of these loads, that's the widest spread that I've seen with most handguns, I think. 296 is actually the slowest of the whole bunch. There's 800X, Solo 1500, accurate number 7, Blue Dot, HS7, 2400, number 9, H110, 296, and 4227. And 296 is the very slowest out there at 1,100 feet a second. And H110 right behind it at 1,150. Of course, H110 and 296, same thing anyway. So, and then it jumps up to 1,200, 1,250. There's one at 1,300. And accurate number 9 is at 1,350. So that would be a great little carbine round if you could get it to feed properly. But let's see, what was I going to say? Oh, my very favorite, what I would have loved, I've never owned one, didn't want one in a handgun, and that was the 357 Remington Maximum. It never did take off and do very well in a handgun. It was too hot, a lot of flame cutting of the top strap and stuff, and it was a little tougher than they thought it was going to be. But they never offered that, I don't think. And maybe they did for a short time. I would have loved to have one of those in a carbine. Man, that 357 Remington Maximum in a carbine would be a great round. That would get right up there and rub shoulders with the 35 Remington. But in a contender, a 200 grain bullet at 1,750 feet a second, that's a lot of horsepower. That's a lot of poop right there for a handgun, even if it is a contender. You get down to the 160 grain bullets, 158, 160, you're shooting those just as fast as the 125 grain out of a 357 rifle. So that's a lot of poop right there. And I think that
for the most part. For what now, when they okay, so I'm not on top of everything with the VZ58. I'm not a good one to ask on them. But what was I going to say here? Thanks, Queso. the 38 special in the rifle, loaded up with the right kind of powder, is about on par with the 357 Magnum out of a handgun. It's kind of like the 22 long rifle out of a handgun. It is. Let's see, what was I going to say? Let me rephrase that. It's like the 22 Magnum. The 22 Magnum out of a revolver is about the same as the 22 long rifle, the high velocity 22 long rifle out of a rifle. Now, when you stick it in a rifle, that's a whole different ballgame. Now, we won't even get off on the virtues of the 22 Magnum right now. But that's another caliber that I dearly love. Great round. But if they had made the... I'm going to look here. Let me look real quick at something and see... Let me play a little short deal here. I'm gonna find something here for you right quick. Or for me, I guess, more than you. Let's see here. I'm gonna stick this in there, it ain't too long. I'll be back in just a minute.
Have you ever been awakened by the crowing of a rooster? While the night dew is still heavy on the ground, and the voice of Uncle Ben seems to break the morning silence, bringing lights to windows all around. Well, it's time to rise and shine and start another hard work day, and get the cows in and start the milking show. On a wood stove seems to bring a picture to my mind of a little three-room house with Mama in the kitchen, but she can't stop to talk, ain't got the time. She's a-fixing Daddy's supper, he's a-working overtime, trying to pay our bill at the grocery store.
Okay, it looks like they never did make a 357 Magnum. There may or maximum in a lever action. There may have been some conversions with varying degrees of success. What they did have, which would still be a neat little gun, is the H&R or the NEF little single shot that you could rechamber pretty easy to the 357 Maximum. So. The I guess they never did figure it was going to last long enough to mess with making the lever action in the 357 Maximum. And that's too bad, because that would have been a hell of a neat gun. It would have been awesome. But, okay, now let's look at the combination. Let's look at the pair of them there. If you have a 6-inch barreled revolver. Now, well, let's go ahead and finish this thought while I still have it. I'll lose them pretty easy. If you have a 6-inch barreled revolver and the little carbine, there is definitely a benefit, a substantial benefit, to being able to load your long gun and your short gun out of the same pocket, having to carry only one kind of ammo. Downside is, you know, in a poop hit the fan situation, you'll have to probably hunt a little bit harder. There'll be lots of 357 out there, but you're not going to find it in case lots and stuff like you will 9mm, 40, 45, even 38s. You'll find a lot more 38s, which is an upside also, is that you can shoot 38s in the 350, either of the 357 Magnums. So that expands your ability to find scavenge for ammo a little bit. But that was Peanut Rider. That was 20 years. Matter of fact, I was just talking to a guy today. He's in Florida right now. And he was with me. I worked on a job with him down in Atlanta, Georgia. Are you off? Okay. Was in Atlanta, Georgia. And that's when the SKSs, we could buy them all day long for $89.95. And the one that I sold here about, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, is one of those that I bought for $89.95. Neat cases of ammo, you know, 1,400 round cases of ammo were, what were they? A single box was like $1.80. So if you bought that much, the boxes were probably like $1.25, $1.40, something like that. So you can do the math on that. But thanks to Comrade Clinton, about 1994, we became the if we weren't already the best armed nation in the world, we damn sure did in late 1994, and when we were still able to buy these guns, and I guess it would have been more like early 1994 because the I don't remember what the month was, but anyway, the people were carrying these things out of the parking lot, out of the gun show at the farmer's market in Atlanta. They'd carry them out like firewood. They'd go out and carry an armload of SKSs out and put them in the truck, and then they'd be carrying, you know, 1,400 round cases, one in each hand, and they'd go trotting across the parking lot, and they'd run about 50 feet and stop and set them down and breathe and sweat and carry on for a little while. And I don't know what these office puppies got, and these overweight guys that thought they were going to be high-speed, low-drag, tactical ninja warriors there. Of course, I'm sure there's no question that some of those guys bought all that stuff just to make money on it, too, because it was way cheap. And I think I wish I'd have known what I know now when those were available. And I would have bought, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 of them with every paycheck, and just set on them for 20 years, and I'd be making good money right now, and especially with that ammo. When the ammo was there for a short time in, when was it, 2008, it was $450 a thousand, $450 a case. I could have bought it for, what was it, a case? It was $100 or something like that, or less. So I could have made a whole lot of money on that deal if I'd have been thinking about it. The I think I told you last night that I had picked up another little lever action 44 Magnum. I'm hoping that Amy will take a liking to. But I got that thing for $125. And problem is it's missing an extractor. I went through the whole issue with you. I told you why I couldn't get an extractor for it. So it's going to be all cleaned up and ready to go. And it's kind of a safe queen right now until I happen to be able to find an extractor for it. And I'm sorry, I keep saying extractor. I meant ejector. Jeez. Extractors are not hard to find. Ejectors for anything prior to 1979 is a little bit tougher to find. But Doc, you know, I probably could if I can find some good spring steel and make it springy after the fact, but I could probably do that if I wanted to mess with it. I've got one to use for a model, you know. I could probably, if I wanted to take the time and effort, I might be able to build one that would work. The original ones were the ones prior to 1979 were one piece of spring steel, just a hairpin design there, and if you could heat it up and put the sharp edges in it to catch the rim and everything, you probably could make one. But that's something I've never tried. Actually, you know, I guess if I really wanted to test my skills here, I could probably make one out of one for the 336, for the modern gun, the 1894s and stuff. All it would require is I'd have to shorten it a little bit and drill a hole in the receiver where that stud will fit in there, and that's all it would take. It would work fine. But I may wind up doing that. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I still got my other one for the time being, so it's doing okay for now. I've got the jeweler's files and all that stuff. I may sit down and try that one of these days just for the heck of it. See what happens. That's a good idea, though. I haven't given that any thought, but I think that's something to consider. But there was something I was going to say now before. You know, I'm going to start getting a notepad out here, because every time I start to do that and get off on a tangent, I need to make a little note, say, hey, you need to remember what you were going to talk about here. So before I got off on the virtues of the carrying the handgun and the carbine together as a combination, feeding it out of the same pocket, I think it's a good plan. Now, we have to remember, I think a lot of us, and I catch myself once in a while doing the same thing, and I try not to. I wish I wouldn't. But one of the things that I think a lot of us do is we are way too obsessed with the possibility that things are going to be overrun by hordes of zombies and thugs and pirates and stuff. And it's quite definitely some of us will, especially those closer to the metropolitan areas. But there'll be people out there just trying to survive. And there'll be people out in the woods and places where, you know, you may run into a person once in a while that, you know, has to be dealt with. But as far as just having to deal with, you know, 100 of them at a time, most of us are not going to do that. As a matter of fact, the majority of those of us that do are probably going to be the ones that go out looking for it. And not looking for trouble necessarily, but just the ones that go towards the sound of the guns. Those of us that may go out and try to keep those people from coming to our communities and our villages and campsites and stuff. So that would be a little different scenario. But for the majority of us, if all you had was a lever action rifle and a handgun to go along with it in the same caliber, if that's all you had and had adequate ammo for it, you could do worse. That wouldn't be a bad choice, and it would last you for quite a while. And the thing is, unless your very first firefight just happened to be with 300 illegal Mexicans from El Paso, then, well, I guess they're from El Paso. They wouldn't be illegal, would they? Yeah, I guess they probably could be nowadays. But there's going to be other weapons out there for the taking. So I think that, you know, if you have the financial means to get caught up, you know, all the different kind of weapons that you want, then great. If you don't, you know, I'd say don't sweat it too much. If you've got a couple of decently reliable guns and a little bit of ammo to get you started, you know, there's going to be stuff out there for the taking. It's just going to be a matter of whether you survive your you know, first couple of encounters or not. If you do, then, you know, there's going to be stuff out there littering the streets. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to survive your first one. You may hide under somebody's steps on the first one, not even shoot. But when the echo dies down and you step out and everybody's gone, you know, there may be some things around there to take. So now when I say take, I don't mean to sound like you, as long as you're taking it from bad guys, let's put it that way. Or dead good guys, people that don't need them anymore. But I think that there will be, I know damn good and well that there'll be some people out there that good guy, bad guy, in between guy doesn't make any difference. If you have something they want, that they're going to try to take it. So we definitely don't want to go down that path. That's not our bag. That's not what we're going to do. But you still might still run across some things that have been abandoned, dropped, left, whatever, or stashed. You know, you may find stuff in the under barrels and pieces of steel and old car bodies and wood piles and stuff like that, where you may find caches of ammo and weapons and stuff. So anyway, without rambling too much about that, don't fret it too much. If you feel like you're a little undergunned because you don't have the latest, greatest $3,000 AR-15 and 10 million rounds of ammo with it, don't sweat it too much, because some of those guys are going to lose too, and they're going to wind up losing their fortune in guns and ammo. So I think that, as Doc always suggests here, put some of that money that you plan to put into weapons, put it into night vision. People don't do that now because night vision is fun to play with. They're just not interested in spending that kind of money to get good night vision because of what might happen in the future. Those of us that know what's going to happen in the future, I've got a couple of sets of decent night vision. It's not anything... not anything real fancy, but they're both relatively new and haven't been used very much, and they will definitely do the purpose. I've got a little monocular and then a set of goggles, and I'll be light years ahead of some of the guys out there, and light years behind some of the rest of them. But I think my goggles are Gen 2. I know my monocular is Gen 1. But even this newer, or not Gen 1, would that be right? Yeah, first generation stuff. Even in this day and age, when some of this first generation stuff seems to me like it's a little better than what we had back in the day. When I was in the military, and the stuff that they gave us obviously wasn't top of the line. We were issued night vision for a short period of time when we had a whole bunch of problems with rioters and protesters and vandalism and stuff going on. So a few of us went out to a facility out of Fulda, Germany there in a little ways. And we were given night vision to do our patrols and stuff with. It's the only time I ever used night vision, the whole time I was in the military. But it seems that the stuff that I have now is the the stuff that I have now, the little monocular, is pretty decent. It ties up one hand, unless you want to, you know, tape it to your high speed low drag Ninja Warrior Picatinny rail or something. But it does tie up one hand, where the goggles are definitely better than that. But back to what we were talking about. The night vision, a plate carrier vest of some kind. Now, I've got some of that stuff, but I'm probably going to wind up relinquishing it to somebody that I'm always going to keep one. But, for some of these younger guys that need protection when they're, you know, going out in the field or whatever, I will probably help out with that as much as I can. But I'll keep at least one around for, maybe for my wife or one of the kids or whatever, depending on the situation. But those are the kind of things that people don't want to put the money in, because it's not anything. You can spend $3,000 on this very cool, POF AR-15 or something, but it's something you can go play with show off to the boys, and it's a prestigious thing, you know. But you get a pair of night vision goggles, and so what, the new wears off after a month or so, and it's just something that sits in the closet, so people are not willing to spend that kind of money. But something that you should consider, not only for your get out of Dodge bag and for the end of the world scenario, but just for a 72-hour kit and for your pickup or whatever, is optics and night vision. Even if all you can do is, you know, those little 12 by 25s, little foldable, little compact binoculars. Some of those, you know, the Simmons, Tasco, and some of those pretty damn good. Bushnell makes one. Pretty good little binoculars for the money. You know, they cost $15. How could you go wrong? So having one of those and a little, the cheapest little night vision monocular that you can find is going to put you way ahead of a lot of people. Is that the best option? Certainly not. But if that's all you had, then that will get you a lot farther than not having that. And making sure you have the right kind of batteries and stuff. Or there's a night vision thing. It may have been Doc that showed it here one night. And that was a one that had a I don't remember if it was a solar charger or a little wind-up charger on it. It didn't have batteries. And it may have been our survival guy that we used to have out at Schatz Ranch. I don't remember who it was. But that would be the way to go. No batteries to keep up with. You know, winding that thing up was, they said was an all-night, would last all night. You know, it was 8 or 10 hours or something like that. So that would be pretty neat. That's what I'd like to have to supplement what I already have there. Queso, Queso's putting a list of things that he thinks you ought to have if you want to go out and be a Star Wars warrior here. And one of the things he's got listed on there is a helmet. That wouldn't be on the top. Now, I guess it depends on what kind of helmet. I think that you would probably use a fast helmet more than you would the full helmet. Now, fast helmet I can see good use for. It's something that you can put a flashlight and or night vision, something on there on the little rails on it. The fast helmet is you know, any of the little bump caps, so to speak, I think the chances of you running into something, whether it's a tree limb or a door frame or something falling on you in a rescue operation or something like that, are probably much higher than needing that full-scale helmet. And the thing about the helmets is if you get hit with a rifle round, it's still going to zip right through both sides of it, so why carry all that weight around? It'll protect you against most of your handguns if it happens to hit you in the helmet and not 1 inch low and hit you right in the eye socket. So that risk versus reward that we talk about all the time, is it worth it to me to wear that helmet all the time? It's hot, it's heavy, and will it give me the protection that I need? Yes, if I run into a low-hanging branch or something whatever that you might get a good bump on your noggin for, yes, it will protect me from that, but so will the Fast Helmet. The Fast Helmet is lighter, cooler, and I think more useful, and probably be more something that you would, you get with that full-size helmet, and you're going to be like some people when they first start carrying a gun. They say, oh, damn, that's too heavy, it's too much trouble, I'm not going to wear that today. So how do you figure out when your day is coming? With the Fast Helmet, I think you'd be more likely to at least have one strapped to your backpack. So when you need it, it's right there, and instead of carrying that 6-pound helmet or whatever they are, that would I do too. And I don't think the there's some pretty affordable ones out there that are like $60, and you know, I've got the money to get them. I always, it's one of those things that I think about, but it is an important item that I think that those of us, especially those of us that are going to be in the field, should certainly think about trying to find one of those. Peanut riders, an equestrian helmet, any type of a bicycle helmet, anything would probably be more useful than the full combat helmet that they have. Now, you know, sure as I say that, you know, somebody will go out there and you can get bonked in the head with something big that more than that little Fast Helmet can stand. But statistically, I think that you'd be much better served with a lighter weight helmet. And it doesn't have to be a Fast Helmet. It can be, you know, there's 100 different options of something lightweight and easy to carry out there. They have, you know, a lot of these paintball helmets and stuff that have the little Picatinny rails and stuff on them. So, Queso just put one, put a little deal in there, said the, some of the Chinese imitation of the Fast Helmets are rated for impact protection. So, you know, that would work. There's no reason in the world that you couldn't consider getting one of those. I'm sure there's some out there for less than $40. And not a bad idea. And you could clip on a night vision or flashlight or something on there. And the more I talk about it, the more I feel ashamed of myself that I haven't gotten one for myself yet. But anyway, I will get one sooner or later.
Swing like a Tennessee lullaby, melody blowing through a You know it sure felt right.
Let's get in and finish this up here. We bounced around quite a bit. I don't know if we covered all the virtues of the 357 Magnum, but one other thing is the ease of reloading for that, and the there's so many powders that'll work fine with the 357. Some better than others, some faster than others, some cleaner than others. But there's lots of different powders that'll work for that. And to find 38, 357 brass and stuff, so much of that stuff. Now, I'll tell you something else that you can do in a poop-hit-the-fan situation. If you did happen to choose a 357, or you happened to find one and it was the only thing you had, or you know, whatever, you can... In the absence of the right kind of bullets, you know, finding reloading components after the poop hit the fan may be a little bit of a problem. But if you don't have a 9mm and you happen to stumble into a bunch of it or take some from somebody or something, the 9mm bullet will work just fine in a 357 Magnum. It's not going to be as accurate, but even so, it'll probably be as accurate as a whole lot of people are with a handgun. A lot of times your handgun is going to be strictly a close range proposition. So we loaded up a whole damn bunch of 147 grain 9mm in some 38 cases for Wesley, and they shot real well out of his little 357 Magnum carbine. So if you find 38 Super, 9mm, the 9mm Largo, 9mm, 9x21, 9x23, 380s. Any of those bullets like that, the 357s, 35 Remington are going to be a little heavy, but you could use them. So there's lots of different sources that you could get bullets and powder and stuff from. So, you know, maybe one of these days we'll get together and we'll sit down and do a kind of a survival type show on the various types of, you know, interchangeability between bullets, primers, brass, what you can build stuff out of and things like that. There's a lot of ways to go that you can make something work. You know, I've talked about this, and people say I'm crazy. They say it's dangerous. And if I thought it was dangerous, God, I wouldn't do it. You know, I've got a wife that I love dearly. I've got kids that I love dearly, and I'm pretty fond of life in general. I'm not going to go out. I like my fingers. I like my eyes. And if I think that there's very much danger, you know, I may be a little reckless once in a while, but I'm not stupid. And people have said that, oh, you can't shoot a 40 out of a 10 millimeter. That's dangerous. Oh, shut up, would you? They don't call it the 10 millimeter short and weak for nothing or whatever it was. The diameter is the same. The chamber's lighter. There is nothing. There's just not anything that can go wrong that I can think of shooting a 40 in a 10 millimeter. You can shoot 380s in a 9 millimeter. You're going to have to rack the slide by hand. But let me back up some 9 millimeters. The Glock is one that shoots 380s pretty reliably. Some of them won't do it at all because it requires the extractor to snap over the rim, where the Glock feeds like a Mauser, and by the time the round gets to the chamber, it's already under the rim. It feeds under the extractor, just like a Mauser rifle. So with that providing the headspace for you, 380s will shoot 100%, or it's been my experience that they'll shoot 100% reliably. And accuracy is fine. The chamber's a little bigger, but accuracy is not bad at all. There's nothing wrong with it. Works just fine. Now, something else that you may not know, and I've done this many times, is shoot, you know, it happened, a lot of people discover it by accident, and they say, oh my goodness, I could have blown something up, blah, 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 woe is me, I'm so stupid, I'm such a wuss, I don't know anything. That is shooting 9 millimeters in the 40 Smith & Wesson. In a Glock, it is pretty damn reliable. In the gun that I'm wearing right now, it is 100% reliable. I have never had one fail to fire. The first one that I did was solely by accident, and it was a guy that was loading magazines for me down in Griffin, Georgia. And I heard this kind of a sub-caliber, or a lighter noise. Instead of a bang, it was more of a bing. But I saw the hole in the paper. You know, we're shooting IPSC match or whatever it was, and I was, you know, 3 yards away or something, so I know that the bullet hit the paper, but it didn't eject. And I pulled it out of there, and the front of the case mouth, was bigger around than the rim. And it was a 9 millimeter shot in a 40. And after that, we've tried it many times since then. We've tested it for accuracy and for reliability and all that. And, you know, in the absence of anything else, if you had to use that for very close range, it would be better than a sharp stick. It would work. We've done it. And we've done it over and over and over. And it's just not not that big of a problem here. So we're kind of getting ahead of here and doing our survival show without. I'll tell you something else that I have done. I have shot. Now, this is not something that you should do. None of you should ever do this. I'm just telling you I have done it, and I hope that I never have to do it again, but if I do, I know what to expect. And that is shooting a 30-30 out of a Mosin Nagant. It will fire each and every time, but you will get a substantial amount of gas and stuff back out of it. So it's not anything that I would want to do. Not anything you want to do recreationally. I did it, so you won't have to. Yeah, the case is split. But if I had to, if that's all I found and it was close range, now the accuracy was okay. Wasn't great, but it was adequate out to, I think we only tried it as far as 50 yards. So I think you could hit a man-sized target 100% reliably at 100 yards with it. You're not going to shoot a two-inch group or anything, but I think you could keep it in a thoracic cavity. But there was a substantial amount of gas and powder particles and stuff that come back out of it. So not anything that you want to do. I'm cautioning you not to do that. I'm just telling you that if worst-case scenario had no other choice and that happened to be an option, then they'll fire. It will work. And I'll tell you something else you could do. Okay, so you're thinking about getting a Mosin-Nagant or already did or something. If the occasion happened to arise and you thought that, I can't think of a for instance right now how you would make this work exactly, but if you were able to, so for whatever reason, able to provide your captor or a bad guy or somebody that you needed to distract for a little while or something, stick a 30-30 in a Mosin-Nagant. If he shoots it without eyeglasses, even if he shoots it with eyeglasses, it doesn't matter. He's going to feel the specks and stuff in his forehead and chin and cheeks and neck and all that kind of stuff. So it's it's just something to think about. 303, maybe. I'd never tried that. I'd want to do some serious soul searching there before I thought about that, but yeah, it might. I'd have to look at the, you know what? I just happen to have right here in front of me right now. Let's just look at that. Let me see what the dimensions are here. Not dementia, Doc. Dimensions. Yes, let's see what the dimensions are. Let me see. There is. Let's see if I can find it here. There's the 300s, 8mm, 8mm .06, 8mm Magnum. Wow, come on, dude. What's the problem here? Let's see. Yeah, there was lots of 303 machine guns back in the day. Okay, so that was the 308 of the era there for a while. All kinds of neat stuff with those things. So why is it, do you suppose? Maybe they just these newer books just don't have 303s anymore. Maybe they don't expect. Oh, there it is. Okay, I got it. All right, there's that. Now let's find the 7.62 by 54R and see what we can come up with here. 7.65. What I'm looking for. There's the 300s. 7.62 Russian. There we go. Alright, let's look at, okay, outside of the rim is 540 thousandths on the 303, 570 on the 7.62 Russian. So there's only 30 thousandths difference there, while the 7.62 definitely would not chamber in the 303. The 303, with only 30 thousandths difference, it would, the length is to the shoulder, 1.826 to the shoulder. Nope. The 303 should not, the diameter there is 412, 458. Without getting real serious here, I would say that your 303 probably is not going to chamber in the 7.62 by by 54. It's quite a bit longer. And even if it did, being that far forward, you may be cramming that bullet pretty tight into the beginning of the the end of the chamber, the beginning of the rifling there. May not be a great thing. I've actually got, if you anybody's interested, I've got a 303 out there that I'm going to sell. It's in pretty damn good shape, and I just don't have any use for a 303. But I've got that. What have I got left out there? I've got a brand new in the box Howa 270. I have a brand new in the box 20 gauge single shot 20 gauge little H&R topper. I have a Remington 241 22. It's an awesome little gun. It shoots well. Not a thing in the world wrong with it. I have a, let's see here. I got rid of the 300 Weatherby. That may be all I have left. I had a 7mm Mauser, the one that I told you about, Doc. I sold it on Gunbroker. Well, I say I did. The guy hasn't paid me yet, so I don't know. I may be putting it back on there pretty soon if something doesn't happen. So, and as a matter of fact, I need to get on there tonight and see when it was he claims to have sent the payment. So, anyway, that's what I've got left. All right, real quick, before it's time to say goodnight, I want to remind you again that the Colloidal Silver Booklet is available both in paper form and now, as of yesterday, in CD form. The CD is in the PDF format. It's got the whole thing, the whole booklet on there. That's what we'll be given with our kits from now on, because the size of the box and everything, there's $4 difference in shipping. I only charge people $6.50 to start with. But there's $4 difference in the shipping when the box that I have to get to keep from, I put the manual, the booklet in a nice little folder and everything. And I don't want it all bent up and wadded up when it gets there. So in order for that to all ride like it should, it costs too much to ship it. So from now on, we're sending the instructions and all the documentation and everything for the colloidal silver kits in CD form. And we're also going to have those available separately. So if those of you that want to make your own kits, or you just need the documentation for it, you want to research it or whatever, I can send you a CD. The CDs are going to be $10, and we're paying the shipping. And the booklets are the same if we send them. Now, if I send the book by itself, it's within, you know, within a dollar, it's the same price. But if I put the silver in the box and everything with it, where I cannot put it in an envelope safely, then price goes through the roof. This shipping thing has just gotten stupid. The Glock Armor CD or the Glock Armor booklet in paper form, either one of them is going to be $20, and I pay the shipping on it. And these armor manuals are every bit the equal of the one that you get from Glock, plus we add some stuff in there that Glock doesn't do. And of course, it's still not a substitute for the whole class. We get into a lot of discussion and a lot of things in the class, and a lot easier to demonstrate a lot of stuff, but you're getting it for $20. The class is the one we're doing in California is $125. Well, normally we do them at the ranch. They're $250. We had people come from California and Oklahoma to come to our last one. Paid $250 for that class. So I don't think $20 for the manual is too much to ask. But and we'll have the book that I wrote, Dying is Not an Option, that's going to be on the online store. Matt, it's there now, actually. And what else here? The colloidal silver kits, the silver strips, you know, all that kind of stuff is going to be on the site here theshootingbench.us is where you want to look for that. Okay, well, I hope you guys got a little bit of use out of this. I had fun. It's always fun to talk about guns and get away from some of the other stuff. Tomorrow night, the show will be coming to you live and in living color, providing everything works according to plan. We'll be coming to you from Schott's Ranch. And when we get finished tomorrow, there will be some important news about Schott's Ranch. And I will let you know Monday what that important news is. So until then, until tomorrow anyway, you guys have a great evening. We'll see you tomorrow for Liberty Lounge. Good night.
A gun will travel, reach the car of a man. A knight without armor in a savage land. His fast gun for hire keeps the calling wind. A soldier of...
Okay, that about wraps it up for another PM edition of the Shooting Bench. To join me every Thursday night for 2 hours of 99 and 44 100% pure gun talk. Good night.
A chest knight of silver is his badge of trust. There are campfire legends that the flames men spin.